I didn't slip Joyce any money under the table for that wonderful introduction. I'm hoping that we can hear a bit from her later about the work that she does with the Pro-Choice Action Network here in Vancouver and with a newly formed Cross-Canada Coalition that she can tell you about and give you some more up-to-date information, because mine is a history. Now, the book I've written covers a little more than 20 years. It starts off in 1968, when the first women's liberation group in British Columbia was founded, and it goes all the way up through early 1991, when the attempt to recriminalize abortion was ended by a vote in the Canadian Senate. And since that time, January 1991, Canada has been virtually unique in the Western world. Joyce has all this data. We are very unusual in being a country with no law at all on abortion, neither for nor against, which gives women a great deal of choice. And that's really to be celebrated. And I think we can see that there is everything to be gained with such a situation. And we have no need to go back to a time when abortion would be restricted or regulated in this country. Now, when the book first begins in the late 60s, abortion was illegal. In fact, in 1968, when the first women's liberation group was founded, abortion was totally illegal in Canada. There was a law passed in 1892, so in the 19th century, that put abortion under the criminal code and outlawed everything to do with it. You couldn't talk about it. You couldn't advise women about how to have an abortion. You couldn't get hold of herbs or any instrument to have an abortion. You couldn't perform an abortion, et cetera, et cetera. And the penalty was life in prison. Well, we've gone from that situation through an interim period in which there was a reform law passed in 1969 to the present situation where we have no law. And that's not the only change, because at that time, abortion was so taboo that people never talked about it. That doesn't mean that women didn't have abortions. Of course they had abortions. Just as today, you know, women generally have to face the facts of our reproductive capabilities every month. And we look at what is coming up and we have to make a decision. Over the period of about 40 childbearing years, a woman is likely to have 500 more or less fertile periods in which she may or may not become pregnant. Well, obviously women cannot bear every child that might be in that time. And there are lots of statistics to show that in fact nature is the great abortion provider, that the vast majority of fertilized ovum are washed out of the system for one reason or another, that we're protected against lots of problems that may arise by our very natures. When a woman is pleased, is excited to be pregnant, then of course we're always excited with her. But if this should not be the moment for her to bring that pregnancy to term, then it is her choice, it's her body, and it's her life ahead of her for the period that it will take to raise a child. No one knows better whether this is the appropriate time to bring a child into the world than the woman who will have to provide for it and may not be in a situation to do that well, and will have to probably set aside a great many of her own plans and concerns if this should may not be the moment for her to have a baby. So my book deals with the first women's group, which was founded by students at SFU and at UBC, and also with women from the community, in 1968. They called themselves Women's Caucus. Now, that may have been because they were part of the radical student movement, and they saw themselves as the Women's Caucus of the student movement on campus, which was very active. Or it may be that they saw themselves as representing women, the disenfranchised, for so many centuries. Well, we don't know. That's been lost. But at any rate, this group was phenomenally active for several years. Abortion was one of its projects, but it was only one. Women's Caucus had four major demands, including an end to discrimination in the education system, channeling of women in the public schools, and quota systems in universities that kept women out of the professional schools, child care, rights for women in the workplace, and abortion and contraception. So the wing that worked on abortion was very active, and they undertook several projects, which you can read about. One was to set up a referral system, and they tried to help women, steer women to people who would perform abortions for them. At that time, although there was a reformed abortion law, which supposedly made abortions available in hospitals, it was almost impossible to make use of that law. The hospitals were not in a big rush to provide abortions for women. So the Women's Caucus set up a referral system, and in the beginning, they had to refer women almost exclusively to illegal providers. They kept waiting to be arrested, but they weren't, because this was a time when there was enormous interest in the issue. Then they decided, well, look, we've got to get rid of this law. And the only way to do that is to go ourselves to Ottawa and let the members of parliament know that we don't need abortion laws. So about 17 women in a group of old beater cars set out from Vancouver to drive across the country. They set the date for arriving in Ottawa to be Mother's Day weekend in 1970. They took about 10 days to go across the country, and they, after driving 400 miles, it was in those days, they would jump out of their cars and leaflet everyone in town, and then they would hold a public meeting in the evening. You understand that they were about 19 and 20 years old. By the time they got to Ottawa, they were joined by up to 500 women, most of them, of course, from southern Ontario, who had heard about and been notified about this action as the women went across the country. Now, while they were in Ottawa, they did a number of things. First, they held a rally on Parliament Hill, and even though they had notified Prime Minister Trudeau and his cabinet that they were coming, no one from the government showed up to greet them. They were a little annoyed about this. And so when the rally was over, they went out, and someone said they'd carried a coffin with them all the way across the country. And someone said, let's take the coffin to Sussex Drive. So they did. They marched over to the Prime Minister's residence. And fortunately, they pushed through the gates, and there was no one there. Fortunately, someone said, sit down. So they all sat down on the lawn, which probably prevented possible future mischief. And they held a sit-in for about an hour. But although Trudeau was holed up inside, he didn't come out to meet them. This made them a bit annoyed. So those women who had to go home went home. But about 100 stayed on in Ottawa. And the next day, they went into Parliament to make sure that it got the message. Now, you had to have tickets in order to get seats in the galleries above the government seats on the floor. And they only had about 36 tickets. So the majority of these women marched around the centennial flame outside. Those who did have tickets ran around Ottawa and borrowed dresses and high-heeled shoes and purses and gloves. And they showed up and presented their tickets. Some of them even had young men to escort them in so that they looked very respectable and middle class. But when they got inside into the gallery, they opened those bags, and inside they had bicycle chains. And they chained themselves to the railings in the Parliament. And when 3 o'clock came, in the middle of question period, one woman and then another woman stood up and began reading a speech demanding that the abortion laws be repealed. It was apparently, I wasn't there to my great regret, but it was quite an event. And of course, when the commissionaires rushed to throw these women out, they were chained to the railings and they had to find some saws first to get rid of them. In the uproar, the Speaker of the Commons finally adjourned the House and everyone went outside. It was the first time in the then 103-year history of the House of Commons that it had been that disrupted during a debate. So everyone wandered outside, and finally the women were thrown out. They were really concerned that they were going to be arrested for this little uproar, but no, there were no arrests. However, the abortion law stayed in place. So they all went back to where they came from, and in British Columbia, between the mid-70s and the early 1990s, there were annual contests for control of publicly funded hospitals. Now, the publicly funded hospitals in the province also had publicly funded or publicly elected boards of trustees. It was very easy to become a voting member of those organizations. The anti-abortionists went around and signed up vast numbers of their members to vote in these elections, and so of course the pro-choice people had to do the same. These meetings, annual general meetings, went from a few hundred to thousands. Sometimes 4,000 or 5,000 or more people would show up. And in fact, by the early 80s, the anti-abortionists had managed to take control of hospital boards in most of the Vancouver suburbs, as well as many other parts of the province. In Surrey, which was the first hospital they were able to take over in 1980, of course, at the first meeting of the hospital board, they banned abortions. Now, really, they only had one plan for running these complex institutions on which we all depend for our health care, and that was they were going to ban abortions. They had perhaps neglected to think about the impact on the medical staff, and the doctors at the hospital said, just a minute here, and they went on strike. That is, they resigned from all the hospital committees, the internal committees, which put a halt to its proceedings. And this went on for at least 3 weeks. Of course, it was front page news all across the country. But finally, the anti-abortion hospital board had to give in because the hospital wasn't functioning. Well, as it happened, the pro-choice group I was active in at the time, which was called Concerned Citizens for Choice on Abortion, had planned a public meeting at the same time, and we had invited Dr. Henry Morgenthaler to come. So he was able to come just at the point where the doctors at Surrey Memorial won their case. However, he was greeted with, you know, enormous respect and adulation because of his incredible fight. And I'm sure you probably already know about that. There have been a number of books written and films produced about Dr. Morgenthaler. And right now, at this very moment, there is a kerfuffle going on because the University of Western Ontario is planning to award him an honorary degree at the end of this month. And there has the House and the Office of the President and the Boards of Governors are being surrounded and constantly there are protests day and night about people whose only idea for everything in the world is that there should be no abortions. So if you have an opportunity, send the University of Western Ontario an email and tell them that you support the award to Dr. Morgenthaler.